You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production on the Bucks Plus Network.
Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
Hey, welcome everybody to Here District. I'm the captain of this vessel. I'm the captain of this vessel. We did that at the beginning, so I had to kind of
It
now. Joined by my first mate, Chris Johnson. We're the only father and son tandem to win a national championship at the same school. But other players that have won them with their dads.
So quick thing right here. I hate to interrupt you, MJ, but we've been saying that Luke and Bill were a part of this esteemed group. But Luke and Bill were not a part of this esteemed group. Luke did not win a national championship at Arizona.
God, Luke never won one at Arizona.
Luke never won. Someone corrected me.
Okay, so
on a post, and okay. So I had to retract.
God, you know, and that always.
But they've won NBA. But they've won the NBA. They did the in-dad NBA championship. Luke's won an NBA championship as
Where did Luke win with the Lakers?
I believe so.
Where did Luke win the NBA?
Luke was a part of a championship team.
Was on that NBA. Lakers team in the 2009 against the 2010 against the Celtics.
Luke Walton. NBA championship. You know, okay. Luke was balling for a minute. Remember, he signed a 5-year 35. He won two championships, 09 and 010. Please, Luke.
Lakers won back to back?
Come on, bro.
Did they? They beat the Celtics?
Kobe! Pow!
Okay, that's right. And then Celtics won in 08, was it? God,
so 2011, Dallas won, and then LeBron reigned. But this
right,
was the
no,
last
no, but I'm saying,
Kobe,
when did Doc win, though? When did
2008,
Doc...
and then Kobe
okay,
won,
then they won. Then they won back-to-back. Okay,
that sort of cements Kobe as, like, post-Shaq being able to carry a franchise on
back-to-back.
Back, with
right.
allegedly lesser talent, but you have Powell and Elo and all these kind of dudes. But anyway.
Yeah. No, so that's a great point, man, because we had been – so now so we've got Mike Bibby and Henry Bibby. Mike Bibby at Arizona, like Luke Walton, who didn't win a championship. He got to the Final Four. They got close one year. I remember that Walton-Richard Jefferson team. I had a dream last night that Channing Frye was throwing down these incredibly hard dunks on me. I was like, man, when did you start dunking so hard? He just laughed and walked away. I think I slapped you upside the head or something. Like, man, when did you start dunking? Channing Frye.
Mr. Road tripping.
Channing Frye was throwing down. Man, that's a crazy dream. But anyway, I digress. So we got the Bibbies. We got Sean May and Scott May. Sean May at North Carolina.
Right.
Sean May at North Carolina. Scott at Indiana. One of the greatest teams in NCAA.
Was that team really that good, though? I mean, that's, you know.
76. Yeah, Bobby Knight. I mean, they were good. Quinn Buckner, Bobby Wilkerson.
Did they beat y'all?
They beat us the first game of the year by 20. Now, see, here's the story. The year before, they were undefeated or whatever. And Scott May broke his arm in the NCAA tournament. So they wound up losing to Kentucky my sophomore year.
So the year y'all won it, they lost in the Final Four.
They lost in the regionals. They lost 92-90 to Kentucky, if memory serves me correct. A hell of a game. And that's what kept them from going to the Final Four. But Scott May broke his arm. So everybody said that if Scott May would not have broken his arm, that would have been the year that the Hoosiers would have won the NCAA championship. So J.D. Morgan, UCLA, scheduled them our first game after Coach Wooden had retired. Gene Bartow, we're playing him down at the Checker Dome in St. Louis. Okay. First game of the year. And this is after, you know, 2 years of Coach Wooden, never thinking about the opponent, only worrying about ourselves, you know, preparing to fail or whatever. We get these really, really thick scouting reports that we never had before, Chris, on the Indiana Hoosiers. And so Coach Bartow and Lee Hunt, also kind of a Southern twang kind of a guy, they've got verbiage in a scouting report like Kent Benson, meaner than a buzzsaw.
Yeah.
Wayne Rafford, he'll fight a junkyard dog. You know. Yeah. And so Gavin Smith, the late, great Gavin Smith, my teammate who got whatever caught up
in a whole crazy thing.
Rest in peace, G. Smith. But Gavin looked at me and said, what the hell is this? You know, just wide-eyed. Gavin was that kind of dude. And another quick story before we begin. So we're playing Indiana. So we lose to the Hoosiers by 20.
Okay.
They throttled us, 85-65 or something, out at the Checker Dome. And the floor was slick like a skating rink. It was just crazy. We play them again in the Final Four in Philadelphia.
Damn.
Semifinals. Richard Washington and me, we go to this tailor. He comes to us, this tailor in LA. I want to outfit you guys for the Final Four. He hooks up these denim jumpsuits with sport coats to match. So we're rocking the denim. Richard had a powder blue. I had a dark blue denim on. Okay. So, we're feeling it. And we played Indiana tough, got to within, I think, 6 or 8 at halftime. And as we're walking off the floor at halftime, we're all pumped up. And Bobby Knight goes and slams the phone down at the press table. He's mad at the officials. And so Gavin Smith looks at him. Gavin had just played well that little stretch before halftime. So Gavin Smith looks at him. So Bobby Smith turns to Gavin and says, F you, Smith. And Gavin says, F you, Knight. F you, Smith. F you, Knight. F you, Smith. Just back and forth about 10 times going off the court at halftime. The craziest thing. They wind up beating us. Now, hit to put a point, put a period on the story. The next game, the third place game, back in those days, they had a consolation game. We were playing against Rutgers. Phil Sellers, Mike Dabney, James Bailey, Eddie Jordan. They're 33-0 going into the tournament. They lose to Michigan in the semis. So they play us in the consolation game. Larry Brown is there from the Denver Nuggets. Gene Bartlow starts me at guard, which he should have done against Indiana. Should have went with the big line.
So who's in the backcourt?
Me and Andre McCarter at guard against Rutgers. Richard Washington, David Greenwood, Ralph Drollinger on the front line. That's 7 feet, 6'10", 6'11". Me at 6'5", 6'6". Andre McCarter at 6'4". That's the lineup Gene Bartlow should have started against Indiana. Anyway, I had like 33-17 rebounds against Rutgers, and that's when Larry Brown wanted to draft me in 1976. Signed me with the Nuggets.
And that's why Phil Hubbard was always cool to me whenever I ran into him through the years.
He's really?
Always been major love, Phil Hubbard.
Shout out Phil Hubbard. Michigan lost to Indiana in a close game in the Final Four. Indiana wins a championship, last undefeated team in college basketball, 33-0, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, so let's get back to us. With all that being said, now we're just a fount of basketball information. So people that listen to this show, I can go down different directions. But man, that stuff really brings back great memories. And speaking of great memories, this first year of Here District,
it's been awesome.
Man, we've been blessed. This is the season of blessings, Chris, of sacrifice, yes, of giving, of appreciation, of acknowledgement of those blessings. And we've been blessed, first of all, to have our first-class staff, Monis Khan, our producer, just outstanding job. Dylan, what's his other two names?
Hunter Carter.
He's got so many names. He's got so many names.
The DHC.
Dylan, DHC. I mean, Dylan, just terrific job in terms of what they've done. But also just the guests that we've had on this show, man, have just been elite level. When I think about some of the guests that we've had on this show,
yeah,
man, I don't know how many other podcasts can rock on any level, really, but can rock the kind of guests that we've had over these past
Depth. It's definitely the depth of we are very deep with guests. Like when you look at the talents that we have brought on this show over the last 10 months, I mean, you're talking about high level executives in the NBA, doctors, doctors that are, into the mental program.
Hey, Dr. Craig Manning.
Look, NBA legends, bro. NBA legends, all-stars, NBA champions, Josiah Johnson. I mean, we had so much variety, dude.
Yeah. Yeah, and even like so like a Tom Corelli. I mean, just kind of a guy you know, not a household name, but
I was
mentioning him on our broadcast because we win the championship in Vegas, the NBA Cup, and then we've got to play Cleveland like two nights later. And so, I'm talking about the schedule again, Tom Corelli, and we had a chance to get him up. So I mean, we've had top tier, top shelf, as Al McGuire used to say. Al McGuire grew up in parents were bartenders or something. So the top shelf stuff, that good stuff where they keep it the top shelf.
Oh, that's why he used to sound drunk on the broadcast.
The top shelf. We've had nothing but top shelf guests. And so what we're going to try and do here, we're going to have a draft between me and you. You got a coin in front of you. You want to have a coin toss?
And people don't do coins. Only Bitcoin, bro, and that's virtual. So
okay, so we're going to do rock, paper, scissors. And I raised you, so I know exactly where you're going to go. So I'll be ready for you. So on three, we're going to do rock, paper, scissors. Who wins will get the number one pick. You ready? I raised you, so I'm gonna get. I got you.
Well, it's a trick. So
no, no, it's not a trick. It's not
okay.
A trick.
It's okay.
Ready? Here we go. Ready? 1, 2, 3. That's paper, paper. All right. You ready? 1, 2, 3. Yeah, I knew you were going to go rock sooner or later. I got paper. I covered you. So I win. Okay, so I got the number one pick. I knew you was coming to rock at some point.
I'll let you have that.
Yeah, no. Come on.
I'll let you have it. Period.
I spawned you, so I know how your mind works.
Hey, girl.
So I get the number one pick of all the guests that we've had. And again, I'm looking at this list now, man. And we were talking right before we went on air with our producer, Monas Khan, and I'm like, man, I can't do it. It's just too many great, great guests, too many great stories.
Yeah, but we had standouts, MJ.
No, but you look at this list. I mean, Mark Spears, David Aldridge, Steve.
You're right. Newton, I mean, it's a heavy hitter. It's a high quality list, no doubt about it, bro.
I mean, it's like what draft? What's been the greatest? What draft has been?
They're saying 96, 84, 96. They're saying 84, 96.
84 was Patrick Ewing and
Michael Jordan.
Michael Jordan, Kim Olajuwon. Who was second? Sam Bowie.
Yeah, Sam but it was Boy. A lot of guys. It was some Sam few guys. Boy, but if Portland. You go, we'd have to break out the drafts to really go through.
Yeah.
They've, you know, there's been some other drafts too that they're saying.
Yeah.
I think, was it Steph's draft? No, KD's draft? I don't know.
Well, but man, look.
LeBron's draft. No, LeBron's draft. 03 with Carmelo, D Wade,
yeah.
LeBron, Chris Bosh.
Right. But look, there's 1977 draft. Yeah, I was just looking at this too.
Except the Kent Benson thing. Look, no, always all due respect to Kent Benson. All due respect, he throws it off.
Yeah,
Worse than Sam Bowie does 84.
Number one pick, I mean, LaRue Martin is widely believed to be
your draft is trash.
LaRue Martin in 1972 is widely believed to be the worst number one pick in the history of the league, I think.
Not Jalen Rose's dad?
Jalen Rose is dead. Jimmy Walker?
Was he number one?
I don't think Jimmy Walker was ever a one pick.
My bad, I'm getting confused.
Jimmy was a heck of a player, but LaRue Martin is the guy out of Loyola Chicago. Had a great game against Bill Walton, gave Bill about 30.
Yeah,
UCLA would always travel to Chicago to play Loyola and then play Notre Dame the next night, Friday, Saturday, back in those days. We'd stop in Chicago, play against Loyola, get a win, and then drive bus down to South Bend and play Notre Dame the next day. Usually night and afternoon. Crazy back in those days. But LaRue Martin gave Bill about 30, and everybody thought he was going to be just a can't-miss NBA player. But I'm looking at – but I talk about 77 because I'm looking at the rookie averages for this year. And this McCain from Philadelphia, who I like, I've seen him a few times. He leads the rookies in scoring like 15 points a game.
Yeah.
I think when Malcolm Brogdon won Rookie of the Year, he averaged about 12 or 13. Him and Šarić were the top two.
You realize Jared McCain is from out here, right?
Is he? Yeah.
He went to Corona Centennial. Bro.
Okay. Yeah, I remember that. Yes, I remember seeing him play. He had the back in the day. Yeah. I remember him. He got off against somebody that I liked. But my point is this. That 77 draft, forget about Kent Benson. We had myself, 20-10. Walter Davis, 24.2. Bernard King, 24.2. You know, Norm Nixon. You know, James Buddha Edwards was like a late first round draft pick or second round. You know, it was just a lot of really good talent in that draft. But anyway, so we're going to do our own draft.
Okay. It's not hard, man. You know, you see what NBA GMs and people, front office people go through when they're trying to make a pick.
Yeah,
when you got a lot of talent that you're trying to choose from, bro.
Come on, bro. Yeah. So I'm going to go first because I got you on the rock, paper, scissors. You went rock. I went papers. I knew you would. So my first pick is going to be, drum roll please. And with the first pick, the captain of this vessel, Marcus Johnson, chooses Joe Dubars.
Okay, that's a good pick. Yeah, now, tell me why.
Well, just that story about the NBA finals. He found out his dad died. Don't get me to start crying on here. His dad died. He wanted to come home and miss the final two or three games against the Portland Trail Blazers.
You'll appreciate this. Dad has died during the game. He died first quarter of the game, something like that. And so I go back to the hotel room with my uniform still on. And this is immediately after the game. So I just put my warm-ups on over my uniform. I go back to the hotel. Before I go back, Marcus, the owner of the team, a guy named Bill Davidson, he says to me, got my jet. You can take my jet. You take it. Yeah. Do what you need to do. Okay. So I go back to the hotel, Marcus, and I call my mom. I call Natchitoches. And I say to him, she said, you know, she's like, your dad held on as long as he could. We have that conversation.
Right.
So I say to her, Marcus, listen, the owner has given me his jet. This is a Sunday afternoon game, game three. Now we are 2-1 in the series. Mm. Sunday afternoon, Marcus, and she says, I say to her, yeah, I think I'm going to fly home tonight. And she said, whoa, what you doing? What you talking about? I said, I'm going to fly home tonight. She said, for what? I said, to be home. She said, and she laughed, Marcus. She said, boy, your daddy would have a fit. He'd have a fit if you talked about leaving your job. He said, are you kidding me? She said, what would your dad say? I said, oh, my God. He would have a fit because, he's from that.
Yeah.
He's from that school, Marcus. Like, right. You ain't missing no work.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So she says, Mark, this is a – I get chills telling this story every time. So we're up 2-1 in the series. She said, when's game four? I said, Tuesday. She said, when's game five? I said, Thursday. She said, okay, this is what we're going to do. You're going to stay there and you're going to play game four on Tuesday. You're going to play game five on Thursday. You guys are going to win both of those games. You're going to close the series out. And then I need you to fly home Friday morning to let your dad to rest. I'm saying, like, you know how hard it is to win in the finals on somebody, to sweep somebody on their home court, yeah, like three straight games? Like, she said that with such confidence. She wasn't saying, like, I hope you guys. She just said,
yeah,
here's what's going to happen.
Wow.
You're going to win Tuesday. You're going to win Thursday. I need you to be home Friday.
I'll see you Friday. Yeah.
And this is exactly how it played out, Marcus.
How'd you play? How'd you play?
Marcus, I was in 29 for the first three games. And then after that, I think I averaged, like, the next two games, like, 12 or 14,
yeah,
15 points.
Sure.
So just, okay, wasn't the same.
Yeah, sure. And I could imagine your teammates were aware of that. They knew they had to pick up the slack. And that kind of thing can have a galvanizing effect, too. I mean, just in terms of, you know.
Isaiah grabbed me before game four. He grabbed me in the locker room. He said, I got you. I said, I got you. Don't. God. I got you. Boy, he went to work.
Yeah.
He went to work. He went to work, man.
He's from Natchitoches. I'm from Natchitoches. You know, I spoke at his high school banquet. His principal was a good friend of your grandfather, my father, growing up. Yes. And so then he reached out to me. He heard I was in town when Joe was a senior in high school before he went to McNeese State in the whenever that was in the 80s, and asked if I'd come by and speak at their banquet. I went by there, gave a little bit of a talk. He introduced me to Joe Dumars. This is our best player going to McNeese State. He's going to be a heck of a player. He was skinny at that time, big old head. I'm like, okay, yeah, okay, Joe Dumars, whatever. But kind of had him on my radar. But that story about his dad dying, and when Joe told it, so I got to do it justice too, and we'll take a look at it too. But you know, Joe was crying, man. Joe teared up on this show and got really emotional talking about it. And we just appreciate. And that's what I think people have told me that stands out about this podcast is that we were able to get those kinds of emotions, draw that deep emotional content from our guests that a few podcasts can go there. So Joe Dumars, because of all those reasons I just mentioned, Chris, is my number one pick, man. Love
okay,
Joe.
That's a great pick. That was a great interview. Yeah. So with the second pick, I enjoyed the Bob Myers interview.
Okay.
I thought Bob was really good, really candid. I love the story. The Cabo story was pretty funny.
The birthday story. My God.
I've been trying to pry this Mexican spring break trip you guys took.
Oh, I forgot about that.
And he just refuses to give me any
It wasn't
advice.
Anything to really be proud of, to be honest.
I think it's a lack of recollection. Like, We don't remember.
The brain cells burned. Disintegrated.
I'll tell you what. On that trip, I've told this story. So we did, Chris and I and a couple other teammates from UCLA, we went down to Cabo San Lucas. You know, normal college spring break stuff. Yeah. So it was fun. We had a good time. So my birthday was always right around spring break. Okay, so this is the payphone era for the kids listening. We used to have to go to payphones. So we all went out to TGI Fridays, and I told the guys, I said, it's my birthday tonight. And they said, that's great. Let's celebrate. So all day we're drinking at the beach, and we go to TGI Fridays, and when it's your birthday, they give you the sundae and the candle and the whole thing. So we did all that, and I woke. I said, this is a great birthday. You know, we all went to bed. And then I woke up the next day. I said, I forgot to call my parents on my birthday. So I go to a payphone. I call my mom and dad. I say, hey, guys, I'm sorry. I just forgot to call. We were out. And my mom goes, son, it's your birthday today. So, yeah, Marcus, I ran back to the guys. I go, guess what? We're going back to TGI Friday. We're getting another Sunday.
We can do it all over
again. Is, you know, you get a call from your kid, and they don't know it's their birthday on spring. That's not perfect. No. That's not a great story. But all good fun. Yeah, all good, clean fun.
That was nice to get all of that out on air. And plus, it was in person. I love all the interviews, but there's like I have something on pretty much every interview, but I'll take Bob.
Okay. So Bob is your number one pick. That's a good one. Okay. So what we got? Two more picks left. Man, it's just, you know, Ann Myers. I mean, that's one of my favorite people. Coach Wooden loved her, thought she represented everything good about basketball in terms of just fundamentally sound and all that good stuff. I mean, Ramona Shelburne, I mean, just talking about Clipped and her role in that and how she put that piece together, turned into a great series. That was fire, and the insights that she had. I love that. Lisa Byington, my partner. I got to throw her.
I liked AJ Johnson and Tyler Smith. Those are our two players. And look, we're here at District. So for me, hearing from them type of dudes.
Right.
I love what it means.
Okay. So I got to make a choice. Well, look, never let it be said that nepotism is not alive and well on our show. So I'm going to go number two, Josiah and Josh Johnson.
Yeah, that was a good interview.
That was a great interview.
It was special.
It was special. They gave some insights into growing up in the Johnson household. And just to have all, you know, three of my four sons together in that kind of a venue, you know, father couldn't, well, I could ask for all five, but to have at least three.
That was dope.
In that kind of venue, and then Josiah and Josh, and not just Josiah and what he is doing with Gil's Arena, and everybody around the country is always telling me how good of a job he does and how much they love the show and love our show, but also Josh. I mean, don't you know Josh just did an episode of SWAT. Josh CBS. Has been a featured performer on All the Queen's Men as a character, Rayshon, and I've been watching this season and does a tremendous job. So he's an actor on the rise. So we got to give him his props, too.
All three played for the same coach that I played for, Willie West.
Yeah, that was wild.
You know, but was there any more pressure?
So now it's twofold. So you take dad and everything he did, and you take everything you did at Crenshaw as well, two-time state champion, city player of the year. You both, I think, first father and son to be city player of the years in L.A. I'm coming in late bloomer, and I remember, Dad, you always used to try to get me to stay back a year. That was like your thing back then. I was not feeling it under any circumstances. Right. Like, I'm not staying. I'm not going. I don't want to be a holdback. I'm too smart for that, whatever. But coming into Crenshaw as like a 5'7 freshman.
Yeah.
So I'm like 5'7, like 160 as a freshman.
I didn't realize that.
And he was like, all right, you're trying out for varsity.
I know he wasn't.
But went up there in the summer, like played some pickup, was doing well. But go out there. Everybody's 6'4", 6'5".
That's tough. I didn't realize you was only 5'7" as a freshman.
Gangsters, hustlers, all that good stuff. All that. I'm 5'7", like, yo, what am I doing out here? So ended up had a different route than you guys. There for 2 years. Hit a growth spurt in between my junior and senior year. I grew like 4 or 5 inches.
Yeah.
But we were so front-loaded at the big man position that I probably wouldn't have got a chance to play till my senior year.
For sure.
You know, it's like 20 dudes on the squad. Like, you know, shout out Coach West, Naho, crew, Mo Duck, everybody, Coach L. You know, Curdy Lug, everybody over there. But for me, it was like, all right, I had an opportunity to go to Montclair Prep with Dad, one of Dad's best friends, former teammates at UCLA.
Who I played for
at Montclair Prep, Bob Webb. Bob's basically like, yo, you come out here, play the whole game.
Yeah. Oh, man. So I remember, so I had some things happen in my early childhood that kind of slowed down my whole
growth process. So I came into high school probably by like 5'6", by 190. I wasn't really athletic or anything back then, but I could always shoot. But I just remember the first thing, you don't jump nothing like your daddy, you know. Yeah. And then it was like, you're not mean like your older brother. And I was like, oh, man. And so, I mean, it sucked. It sucked. I mean, I'm not going to lie. It sucked. But, you know, things kind of changed for me after high school and all that, and I've never looked back. And so I don't like to spend too much time talking about my high school days because I'm flourishing now. And that's the most important.
Well, if I can share what happened to you.
Go ahead.
That was one of the toughest times of all our lives. I mean, from 7 to 11 leukemia, chemotherapy.
Spinal taps and all that stuff.
Spinal taps and the whole thing. And so, I mean, we're just blessed, man. You know, you've been in remission for all these years.
24 years.
Yes, sir.
But what did that teach you? I mean, do you remember that? What were you able to pull from it in terms of the person you are today?
Well, firstly was that I'm loved. I remember just kind of like vaguely like the first time I seen tears in your eyes, and then I remember Chris was missing a lot of practice coming to see me all the time, and you know, I'd wake up, Chris would be right there. Josiah didn't go home all summer, so I mean, just kind of remember from that point that I was loved in a sense, you know, and like, you know, I had like strong males in my life, you know, and like I kind of revert back to that from now because, you know, we all kind of grew up in this era of toxic masculinity and blah blah blah, but it was the first time I realized like I had three strong and my younger brother Mariah too, individuals who were vulnerable and just cared about me.
You know, Josiah, when he came on the show, he was talking about, it took about 3 months. Well, about 3 months for you guys to have me on here, man. So, I mean, it's about time. Episode number 17, you finally asked me to come on. So, I was trying to figure out, what was up. It's a funny story. I was with Josiah and his family watching his two sons, Marky and Joey, play 7 and 5, 7 and 5, I think 7 and 4, but they play a couple of weekends ago. And so Joe's lovely wife, Dr. Aaron North Johnson, she asked me how your sister, my daughter Shiloh, was doing as a freshman at Windward. So I downplayed it. I was like, yeah, you know, she's doing okay, Aaron. I mean, she could be a lot, but do this. Then I said, wait a minute, Aaron. Now, you see, you told me how hard Josiah can be in terms of pushing his sons. You see where he gets it from. I'm sitting here downplaying Shiloh's freshman season, where she's been a starter the entire first part of the season as a freshman in high school.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you that she's just doing okay. I said, no, actually, she's doing great. I said, you see where Josiah gets it from. She's like, hey, I see where she gets it. But, and you can attest to this. You know, you push my grandson Will. We push our kids, man. And we're on top of things. We're coaching. Josiah's coaching both their teams. He's out there. He doesn't miss a practice. He's got to fly back on a red eye. You know what I'm saying? He schedules.
He's locked in.
He schedules his professional appearances around coaching his boys, man. And that's the kind of dedication, man, that I've had with you guys, that you've had with Will, your son. You know, people don't know that about the Johns. My dad started it with me. You know, he showed up so much, he got on my nerves. I'd be like, Dad, can you stay home sometimes instead of coming to every practice, you know, in high school as a non-coach? The players are teasing me, calling you Coach Johnson. But now I get it. I do the same thing.
Yeah, it goes hand in hand, you know, when you're Johnson as far as balancing your professional stuff with, you know, coaching up your kids, whoever it is, brother, whatever, you know, you're going to lock in. But Joe does a tremendous job, man. The hours that guy puts in, people don't really understand. As executive producer, is like the guy, the real engine, the brain, the core of that show. Like if they're going, you know, 7 to 2, he's doing that 5 days a week. Then he's waking up the next day, doing it all over, putting the whole program together.
Yeah.
Like, you know, booking the guests. Like he does a lot. And so there's a reason why it's so successful. Josiah's behind that.
Yep. So that's my number two pick, Josiah and Josh Johnson. Great episode.
Yeah, that was a fun one. So my number two pick, it's like kind of two. I really enjoyed the Matt Barnes interview that we had. And then I enjoyed...
Showed up in person.
That was in person. Stayed with us over an hour.
Left his laptop behind.
Left his laptop. I had to get the laptop.
Uber it to him or something, right?
Yeah, the laptop was Ubered in a secure, bulletproof type of Uber because that laptop, buddy.
Yeah, man.
But anyway, Matt was great because.
Like Hunter Biden's laptop. Yeah, but go ahead.
I'm just saying you're like Hunter Biden.
I'm just saying about it.
Dad, that has implications. Look, in today's world, that'd be like, what is he trying to say?
I'm just saying.
What is he trying to say?
In terms of popularity and just, you know, recognition and renown, it's Matt Barnes' laptop. You know, not like there was anything nefarious going on. Not at all. Matt is salt of the earth.
And then Matt, so for me, it was the John Henson commentary.
Ah, yeah. Well, the combination of those two, right?
So, and that's what is my number two draft pick. Okay. So it's the fact that, you know, Matt came on, kind of talked about that incident a little bit. And then we had John Henson come on to kind of explain his side of the story. MJ, you were on the call that night.
I was working a game, Bucks against Memphis.
When I was about to whoop John Henson. And I think you said it too. Uh-oh, Barnes going to the line. It's funny you brought that up, man. I haven't thought about that. Hey, Marcus, I was pissed. I actually had a good game that game too, but I think Henson didn't play the whole entire game, and he came right in and hard fouled someone and started talking trash. I'm like, bro, you guys are up and you haven't even played. Like, chill out. Let's just let this buzzer go off. And then, so he hard fouled a teammate, and I was like, yo, chill out, bro. He's like, well, you don't want this. Something weird. I let the first one go, Marcus. Let the first one go.
Mark, I hope you know me, man. That's not me. Come on, man. You know me. Yeah. That don't even sound like me. Like, come on, you don't want none of this.
Yeah.
Nobody says that. I don't say that. Prior to the game, you know, J. Kidd sat me in his office. He's like, look, man, we're down the stretch. We need you. Can you play? I was like, man, I could definitely use a couple more days with this back, but you know, if you need me, coach, I'm going. I'll suit up. So he doesn't play me the whole first half, and so I'm sitting over there fuming. I'm like, why would I suit up if I'm not going to play? It just made no sense, right? Matt comes over there, and I'm like, listen, man, this has got nothing to do with you. I don't know why are you talking to me like this. This has nothing to do with you. And then he was just like, oh, you know, you're disrespectful, young, da da da. Oh, you disrespectful. Okay. And I'm like, all right. You know, like, it wasn't really much banter back and forth. Definitely wasn't trying to, like come get you some. Like, No, I'm not a fighter. I'm just not a fighter. I'm trying to get him back in the rotation because I was out for about a month.
Yep.
I'm a young player, so I'm trying to make a name for myself. And at the end of the game, I'm not letting up. I'm not Matt Barnes, 14, 15-year career champion. Like, I'm not that guy. So I got to go hard, right? Saw opportunity to block his shot at the end of the game. I did it. Yeah. Swatted it, made a face, a scowl.
Turned up.
The fans all
they turned up.
Next time I'm coming down and I kind of fumble it, and then I go up because that's all I can do, and he blocks it, and he starts doing this scowl and stares. All right. Are you going to keep playing with me? It's going to be a real problem. He's like, oh, you want some? He said something to the fact that you want some. And at that point, we were getting blown out. We were in Milwaukee. I was ready to go. So I wasn't having it. So he gets a double T and gets kicked out. But I had a T from earlier in the game. And they gave me a T just for, I don't even know what I did. I think it was Zach Zarba. I'm like, what did I get a T for? And they're like, we just want this game to end.
I think the refs just teed me up to just get me out of there. I don't even know if I did anything to get teed.
Yeah.
And they teed him up too, which I know that's what irked him because he shouldn't have got a tech either.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. He just kind of like went up to me a little bit. I was whatever, snarling, growling, whatever you want to call it.
So I got kicked out the game. So I'm like, all right, so we're going to see how tough you are. So he gets out first. So I take off and I know the backside of your guys' locker room. You can come out the backside just like we can. So I go in there and chase him into the locker room. He doesn't, I don't know if he knows I'm coming initially, but I think someone might've told him.
Next thing you know, like all of a sudden they wouldn't let me leave the arena. I hear he's coming. And I'm just like, okay, like, well, here we go, right? Like, But he didn't get, he got kind of halfway into the locker room and then the security kind of grabbed him.
So I get to the locker room and Greivis Vásquez wasn't playing that day. Right. And he had, I had just barged in the locker room. Little did I know there was cops and coaches behind me, but I was going to find him and Greivis like, nah, he just went out the back. Like, you know, so he snuck back out.
Yeah. If he would have got through there, he would have had me dead to rights. I was facing the wrong direction.
Jeez.
Yeah, now, what was your reaction? So you see him being held. Were you like, let it go? Come on. Let it. Or were you just kind of chill?
No, I was just, like, hey, look, if he got through there, then, you know, it was going to be me and him for a little bit.
As a man. As a man. Stand on business.
There, you know what I'm saying? It was going to be me and him for a little second.
And then so I was pissed. So I got back to my locker room, showered, didn't care what the coach had to say, showered up real quick and went and sat up by the bus. And I sat up by the bus for like an hour and dudes were coming out like, yo, he's not coming out. He's standing right here until like the Memphis secure, or excuse me, the Milwaukee police to kind of troll the area and get the buses off. Yeah. Like, Mr. Barnes, you got to go. Like, I made the bus wait. Now, like, I wanted to see how what he was talking about.
I hate that narrative. Like, I was scared to leave.
Yeah.
Mark, they took my keys. They wouldn't let me leave the gym. They took the keys of my car. They're like, you can't go.
Yeah.
Sorry. Sit down. I don't have any ill will towards him per se. Like, you know, that's just how basketball goes sometimes. But yeah, it was definitely one of them situations where just, you know, tempers flared and it's an emotional game. I was having a bad day. He might have been having a bad day too. And it was the right time.
I just find that story just to be so funny.
Yeah,
because of Matt's personality, I mean, just how he was getting down and just running into the tunnel.
Oh my god!
I mean, you were on air. I mean, your commentary really made entire episode more hilarious.
He went looking for John, and John, you know, John to his credit was like, no, you know, I wasn't I wasn't hiding. Yeah, but they had security back there. But John was like, you know, it was done as far as I was concerned, and I didn't realize he was taking it all that serious. That was, but just. So that's where we applaud our producer, Mona's Khan, for just packaging, you know, those two elements together, man.
Having
and just,
that thought, even thinking to do that.
That was fantastic. That was fantastic. So now, number three for me, and I mentioned so many people, man, this is so hard. Mark J. Spears was great talking about his dad and when he won his, when he became inducted into the Hall of Fame. And David Aldridge was fascinating. I guess,
J.A.?
Yeah, J.A. But, you know, I think because he signs my checks. No, I'm just kidding. But where I got to go, man, because we had a fascinating conversation with Peter Fagan.
Oh, yeah.
He was one of our early guests.
That was dope.
And, you know, I hit him with the...
The twin?
I hit him with the twin because I started out, there was a friend of mine named Crystal who has two twin boys and she couldn't understand why Robin Lopez was cut. And why was he cut? I'm like, Crystal, why are you tripping on Robin? Because he's a twin and I got twins. And I just, so I was able to segue that into a conversation with Peter, or a question with Peter Fagan about him and his twin, Daniel.
Dude,
and then he just went off about the whole twin psychology and they, you know, finished sentences and talk every day.
Just how serious it is.
Talk every yeah. How often do you talk to your brother? Every day.
It was so fascinating to listen to Peter Fagan break down that in such great detail. But that entire interview really was high level for us.
Quickly, and I hope you don't mind, but I want to get into just a little bit of this. You got a twin brother, Daniel.
Yep.
And it's really interesting because, Chris, sometimes we'll be on the road, Charlotte, North Carolina, and I think I see Peter, but then as I walk closer, I was like, no, that's not Peter. And then I realized that it's Daniel. Now, I mean, you guys, spitting image, did you guys ever pull any of the Patty Duke pranks of him taking your math test and you taking Spanish, any stuff like that?
Yeah, we did it once with a girl, which we thought was hilarious, and the girl did not think it was hilarious. And then we did it academically where he did much better than I did academically. So we're probably like at a 3-1 taking finals exams for each other. He ended up in academics and is a head of school for a private school in New York City, which is kind of the genesis of how I got this job. Two of the parents actually were owners of the Bucks. When they started to do the acquisition, and that's how I kind of got attached to them.
And the thing that makes us unique, man, I can't tell you, like, there's not a lot of team-oriented podcasts that are able to get a president of basketball, assistant general manager, two players, summer league coach, you know, like, you know, and then the legends of the organization too.
Dr. Craig Banning, I mean, the performance.
A team performance
guy who gave us such great insight into how, you know.
We got range, bro.
Craig Banning, I think about now, you're listening to Giannis's conversation the last 4 to 5 years, but I see how it's matured and there's a systematic kind of an approach, how he approaches, you know, when he talked about there's no failure, you know, it's all about growth and learning from setbacks. And he didn't consider, you know, the playoffs to be a failure, whatever, last year, a couple of years ago, when Eric Name asked him that question. So, and that's Dr. Manning. That's Dr. Manning's influence in terms of how he's getting players to look at their, I said it on the air during that interview. I wish we had a guy like that around when I played, that I was 21, I 4 years in college, but still just 21 on my own for the first time, a little money in my pocket for the first time, you know, and it just was.
How much were you making a week when you were 21? When you were 21, just give us a number.
Well, but like $95,000 a year was my first contract. I think my contract started at 95.
So if we look at how much that was back then, so how much was that a week though? Like in the 70s, like what were you getting? Were you paid twice a month?
Yeah, like a monthly basis. So, you know, 12 goes into 95, what, about 8 times or so?
So probably 8,000 a month?
8,000 a month.
It's 77?
Yeah, with, you know, taxes and everything. But that's still.
What's that, like 50 years ago?
77. I mean,
or that's like 40, 46?
Jesus Christ.
No, yeah, 47. Was, 47 enough, years ago.
Yeah.
So that 8,000, bro, my point is that 8,000 probably, if we looked at how much that is today.
Well, somebody figured it out.
I would have Modus.
No, somebody figured it out on Twitter. They told me that it's like worth about $560,000 a year.
That's
$95,000 then. Wow. Is equal to about $560,000.
Wow, they had you on a bargain.
In today's dollars.
And that's a rookie contract.
But again, money in my pocket and you know, being on my own, being in a city in Milwaukee that just being honest, you know, it was a big letdown from Los Angeles and coming in.
Wow. Well,
Milwaukee compared to Chicago, New York. You know, I'm thinking
What were you looking for? Were you a professional athlete? You're going to a city to do a job. So what was the letdown about Milwaukee?
Nightclubs and ladies and hanging out and hangout spots and all that all night stuff. That, you know, I'm 21, bro. I'm coming off of hanging out at Studio 54 with OJ and Nicole and that whole crew back in 1977. I'm back there for the College Player of the Year Award, Sport Magazine. I got my car. See the picture with your dad, with your grandfather, my dad. You know, the umbrella and all that. We got the brand new car from Sport Magazine. It's actually a lease for a year. They don't really give it to you. But that's all in New York. Staying at the Plaza, you know, going to Studio 54, hanging out. You know, OJ's in there. Hey, you know, I got a little bit of this. You want to take a little bit of this with you? All that good stuff, you know. And so that's what I'm used to. L.A. hanging out, you know, with Dr. Jerry Buss and Warren Moon and Ronnie Lott and James Shaq Harris and the Troubadour and the Oscos and all the live spots. So Milwaukee, you know,
was
more tavern, tavern than disco. So it was a letdown. Plus it was cold, Chris. My first winter here was the coldest winter they'd had in 20 years. My second winter here, they got more snow than they had in 30 years.
So what was the first winter that I came out there? Because my first memory of Milwaukee was that my face was burning when I stepped outside. Was it during that? Okay, so that makes sense. Because it was like, I couldn't believe how, I was like, my face started burning as soon as I stepped outside.
Yeah, see, I had the house on Greenwood and right around the corner from Junior Bridgman and Sidney Moncrief. We all lived like within like, this is Glendale. Glendale, right outside of the downtown Milwaukee. This is where Nicolet High School is. Where the kid from Atlanta, Johnson, the great
Jalen
Johnson. He went to high school at Nicolet, but right around the corner from Nicolet High School, you know, right there off of Good Hope Road in Wisconsin. And so that was when you first came out. I had the Bucks backboard and hoop on the door, and you just would like play with the sweatbands. Had the greatest little form at like, wow, were you like 4 years old or something? Like great form, 3 or 4 years old. And that's when I knew you had potential to do something. But anyway, So Craig Manning, that's what I was talking about. So what am I doing? Am I picking a third? Or
I think I think the third is on me, right?
Because who did I pick as my third? Peter Fagan. I picked Peter Fagan as my third.
And for me, like, I mean, dude,
God, man.
This third pick, I think because of
we might have to expand this to five picks, man.
I think because of the magnitude of the interview and the magnitude of who you know he is, not only to us but just what he's accomplished as an American icon. I think Junior Bridgman, Junior Bridgman interview for me, it's like super high level. Talking to not only an NBA owner but someone that's was ahead of the game on business to a level that no other NBA player has ever gotten to, other than Jordan and Vinnie Johnson. Like, he's up there with like the heavy hitters. And just to sit and talk to him about the Louisville connection and Coach Crum and how the UCLA thing was, and then hearing you guys just go back and forth about just how you were able just to kind of recall his memory about a lot of stuff.
Right.
Like, that was a really personal and fun interview for me, just to kind of be a fly on the wall and listen to.
NBA ownership. When did that first come on your radar?
At first, maybe when Herb Cole was the owner way back when, there were rumors that he wanted to sell. And so I won't mention his name, but there's another gentleman from family from Racine, Wisconsin, very well off. And so he called and said, hey, you know, I'm thinking about going after the Bucks. You have any interest in getting involved? And, you know, I said, well, yeah, you know, I'd like to, and talk to the league. And they thought the Bucks were worth, you know, a couple hundred million dollars at the most at that time. And so he went through the whole process, and then Herb decided he wasn't going to sell. And the team kept going, and then I heard that Herb was going to sell it again. And that time I said, you know, they called and asked, were you interested? The newspapers did. And I said, well, yeah, you know, I'd be interested in being a part, but, you know, not the majority or the main guy or anything like that. And so he sold it then to Mark Lazary and Wes Edens, and met with them. And then it just didn't feel like the timing was right, it just didn't feel right. So I didn't do it. And then I met, year and a half ago, Jimmy Haslam, you know, one of the owners, and, you know, we just kind of hit it off, you know, kind of same thoughts about things and about life and about what's really important in life. And so he's really the reason that he talked me into getting involved and saying, you know, we'll make it make sense. And if you get involved, you know, you can be involved. You can have, some say or being involved in all our meetings and talk about what's going on and all those kind of things. So I said, well, if that's the case, then I'll seriously look at it. And it became a reality.
Well, it was really crazy that he didn't remember. But when Brian Winters retired, we had a void for the captain position. And I'd just come off of one of my holdouts, you know, trying to get more money. And we had a team vote for the next captain. And I'd been buying, like, you know, just jugs of apple juice and grape juice on ice after practice. I'm politicking because I want that captain's position. We take the vote, and Junior wins. I think I voted for Junior, I told him. But he didn't remember that. He's like, I know him. I wouldn't. You know, no, Junior, I remember. You know, you don't, when you're on the losing end of that kind of a vote, after everything you've done to try and sway the voters in your direction. But that's the kind of respect that we had for Junior. I love Junior. He was the first guy to take me out in Milwaukee, took me to a place called Taran's, an old tavern, but with the best fried chicken basket, fried chicken and fries I've ever had in my life. But it was a tavern, and it was kind of like my first taste of Milwaukee nightlife. He had a blue Corvette Stingray. This is right before he got married. So he had the blue Corvette Stingray. We were rolling in the blue vet, you know, in Milwaukee. I'm like, okay, this is cool. We pull up to Rand's. I'm like, okay. You know, but it was, but he was a terrific friend all through the years, man. And just to see him do what he has done in the fast food business with Bridgman Foods, but then to segue that into Coca-Cola ownership, bottling plants, internationally, and then as an owner of the Milwaukee Bucks, man, I just, you know, I get misty-eyed thinking about just watching all the good things that have happened to him, and it couldn't have happened to a better person. He's just he's the kind of guy, and he, you know, I'm probably talking out of school, but so now, you know, I never asked any of those guys to borrow money, anything like that. But with Junior, I always want to throw ideas by him, and so I had an idea for a game, a video game about this. This bike rider, a BMX bike rider, Nigel Sylvester, this young brother out of New York, really, really high level bike rider. And so
you don't remember we worked on.
I'm telling this for the viewers. We worked on all.
Well, make sure you make him understand that I was actually involved in this, the person that you're talking to.
Right. So Nigel Sylvester, we got this thing going. So I go to Junior, run it by him, and so instead of, you know, shooting it down like, yeah, I don't know, video game, that's not a good idea. He's like, look, I'll give you access to my whole legal team. My development team. I'm like, well, Junior, I ain't got the money to pay for that. Oh, I got it. They're on retainer. They work for me. They're on retainer. So I said, he gave me access to all his high level development legal people that helped me kind of, work through the numbers and the process. Wound up not doing it because they didn't think it made sense. But it was about a 4 or 5 month process, and all this stuff, gratis for free. That all this great high level information that I have access to, and Junior kind of friend he is. He was responsible for all that. So. I'm glad you picked Junior as your third draft pick. So let's do a recap. I picked Joe Dumars as my first because of the Natchitoches connection, his dad passing away, the great story he told. Josiah and Josh, number two, because of, just what they're doing in their respective careers, and they happen to be my sons. And then at number three, Peter Fagan, because of just an overall great interview, but especially the discussion about being a twin. And we kind of, I thought we kind of caught him by surprise when I asked him that question, and he just lit up and opened up, and that's what I like to do in interviews. Just catch, our subjects with off the wall kind of questions that they're not really prepared for. And I think all three of these guys were terrific interviews and handled it appropriately. So your three were?
Yeah. Mine are Bob.
Bob Myers. What was Bob's story? Was the birthday story and everything else he talked about? Okay.
Yeah, we touched on the trip to Cabo. The level of insight is a world championship NBA former general manager, and these guys are meeting with us in between doing NBA countdown. So it's like, it's a high level interview. Yeah, think about it. Right. Hey, I got a break on NBA countdown. I'll come chop it up with you guys. Bob's thing kind of resonates with me. My number two was the Matt Barnes, John Henson deal, but Matt Barnes interview, but just that whole interaction with them bringing up the story about the fight and all that happened.
Kind of a meet me in Temecula kind of a thing. Yeah, that was good.
Absolutely.
That was good.
And then Bucks minority owner, Junior Bridgman, former Buck, obviously. I mean, that was just a great interview because I had never, I've had it. I've done other podcasts. I used to have my own podcast. Yeah. I had, 50, 60 episodes. I've never interviewed someone that was an owner. That owned NBA team. Yeah. No. Even though he's Uncle Junior, he's still an NBA owner. I'm like, God dang, this is a crazy moment in my life to be sitting here on a screen having this guy on the screen. Yeah. Holy crap.
That was impressive. And so honorable mentions for me. I'm just throwing these names out there. I got, Chris Haynes talking about being related to Mariah, Giannis's wife, as a cousin,
And Chris's story was dope.
Fascinating. The way
Chris is dope.
Just was writing about, writing, I don't know what it's called, but any kind of high level journalism, but somebody
paying
said,
his own way, paying his own way.
Go to Portland. Go to Portland.
Paying
man.
His own way. Yeah. That's the thing that stands out. Hey, I'm just going to pay my own way, figure it out, and then get in and hustle. It's inspirational. He was inspirational. Yeah.
And then Michael Ray Richardson.
That was great.
Just one of my closest friends. We don't hang out or talk a lot, but man, we just have so much love. We've got shared experiences, both had our issues with drug addiction and both have successfully dealt with that. He's got probably 30 years sober. But it's funny, Chris, I'm trying to find the text that he sent me, but he called me the other day. When we were in Cleveland, and I was just about to get onto the bus and to go to the arena, and phone rang. So it was Michael Ray in the elevator. I said, I got to pick this up. So I got to the phone. He's like, what's up, man? He said, man, man, Mike Trubisky, nominated for the Hall of Fame. You ain't never made an All-Star team, man. Mike Trubisky, by the way, congratulations to you for being a finalist again, blah, blah, blah. But and I told Doc Rivers also congratulations to him. He was nominated himself. And I just hung up with him right before I got on the bus. Doc Rivers was already on the bus. I was like, man, that was Michael Ray Richardson complaining about Mike Trubisky being named for the Hall of Fame. But I hope that the voters and people look at Michael Ray's whole body of work and give him strong consideration, because again, it goes the opposite way so many times. These guys who are great European players and just okay NBA players, Vlade Divac and some other guys are voted in as international superstars, as well they should be. But I also think a guy like Michael Ray, who had his issues, great player, 5-6-time All-Star when he was here in the States, one of the greatest defensive players in history, goes overseas and plays another 15-20 years and wins championships. So yeah, in terms of his whole basketball body of work,
yeah,
you know, is what we're talking about. It's not the NBA Hall of Fame. People get it twisted. It's the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. It's what you did to contribute to the game of basketball. And I think that's a lesson that young people can benefit from just as much as all the positive stories. It's a positive story that didn't start out positive, but it turned out to be one of the most positive stories that I'm aware of.
Yeah, I wish that, you know, the Naismith Hall of Fame operated more like Canton in the NFL Hall of Fame, where none of that stuff about what happened off the field, off the court, how much coke you was snorting, alcohol you was drinking, partying you was doing. None of that matters on the NFL side of things. It was about what you do on the court,
on the
field. Lawrence Taylor is a doggone first ballot, unanimous Hall of Fame dude. Like all these guys, dude. Right. Like so we need to separate that. Like I understand like the tarnished or whatever the what that has on somebody, but you got to recognize people for how they respond to their failures and their setbacks also. Yeah. Like, we don't give enough props for that. You know what I'm saying? Like, we got to start to look at that and say, you know, okay, show that guy some love. And, but to your point about the interview, I thought it was dope to be able to talk to Michael Ray about his son, Amir, who one of the best soccer players in the world, is a midfielder for ACF Fiorentina in Italian Serie A. And just to get some perspective on, you know, how he came up and just to hear it from Pops, that was great. And then also the moment during the Michael Ray Richardson interview, when Otis Birdsong popped in.
Yeah, right, right.
The legend Otis Birdsong pops funny. In. And then he gave you Hall of Fame love. Said, yeah. Told you he was a Hall of Fame. So that was a special moment for me, but that interview was super, super dope.
Yeah, so let me plug this while I'm thinking about it. Michael Ray's book called Banned. You can pick it up on Amazon or wherever you get your books from, but he wanted me to make sure and give that book a shout out. That's his personal. There's been other books written about him. My co-author, Charlie Rosen, we're working on a book on Crenshaw High. He's written a book about Michael Ray Richardson. But this is Michael Ray's, you know, authorized biography that he was involved in. So Banned, check it out. Fascinating story. And yeah, we appreciate everything that he shared. And then that whole Amir soccer, I had no idea. I mean, that was a great nugget on your part. Any other? I mean, Zora Stevenson, got to give her a shout out.
Of course,
honorable.
Well, I love
working with her, Lisa Byington.
Yeah, Lisa was great. That was a fun time. For me, honorable mention. I mean, Dr. Craig Manning. And then Dr. Craig Manning was super, super deep.
Yeah,
because I love talking to like people like that.
That's
like I love having those conversations. I love connecting with those type of people, and the insight that he was able to provide us into how the high level elite professional athlete like a Giannis and these NBA guys operate. It's just, it was dope. It was fascinating. Another, I think another episode that probably should have been in the top three was our Mental Health Matters episode, where you and I did it out there in Milwaukee at the studio. That was a really transparent, open, honest, candid, you know, took the gloves off interview that, you know, if you really want to get deep, you go ahead and go back and put that on.
Yeah.
That's about an hour and 30 of some stuff, you know, if you really want to go listen to some shit, Go listen to that interview, okay? Hey, go listen to that podcast, that episode, bro.
You got to be in the right mindset for that one, man. No, that was
Hey, it is what it is.
No, man. But the transparency, because of the transparency that we both both were able to share in that, and you know, a lot of stuff going on, but man, it's just beautiful that we can, you know, we can lock in, but we can share this platform that we've been sharing here for the past few months, and it's been a real joy for me, and I look forward to many more episodes in the future. So that's the draft pick.
Is that it? You gonna edit there? We gonna cap it? Because I have one more.
Oh well, go ahead, man.
The Sidney Moncrief revelation about when he had the remember at the dealership when he went to get his money.
Oh wow,
bruh!
He turned all Raymond Dickens on the
That was deep. Yo, go listen to the Sidney Moncrief podcast.
Right,
you gotta lock in. You can be able to pull up the transcript to see what we're talking about. But Sidney had to go and retrieve some funds that someone owed him at one point. And he goes into great detail about it. I thought that was a super dope story. And I just like Sidney's podcast just in general. His personality, I love that type of personality, that Southern country kind of dude. But he's but he's sharp. He's sharp as hell.
Sharp as a tack, man. Written about 5 or 6 books, you know.
He was one of my favorites as well.
One of my favorite teammates. And then we talked about Milt Newton and the Alvin Gentry story.
That was dope.
That might have been the best story. Basketball stories. Milt Newton tying up Alvin Gentry butt naked and putting him in the elevator.
When you're at the University of Kansas.
Throw him in an elevator. He goes to the ground floor and the elevator opens up and all these boosters are down there at cocktail hour and, you know, the doors open. And he's getting there like, The imagery is sick on that one.
I thought Milt's interview was really, really high level.
Yeah.
It's very rare you get the perspective of an NBA assistant general manager.
Right.
That's going to break down moves, why they made moves, the different characteristics that he's looking for in players. Like, we peppered him with stuff and Milt was live. He was open. He was transparent. He wasn't, you know, he gave us the goods, bro.
Yeah. So all of our NBA people that have come on, Eric Name, Jamal Collier, Chris Haynes, we talked about, Dave Kane, radio voice of the Bucks, have been outstanding. Mark Spears, we talked about. David Aldridge. Did you ever see his top 100? I never really followed up on that. He was doing a book on the real top 100 players of all time.
Check it out.
Yeah, I got to see if he mentioned me in there. I asked him, did he mention me? He's like, you gotta buy the book. So I gotta follow up. But anyway, so that's Steve Novak. That was a great interview. Just you know,
Steve had the Dikembe Mutombo impersonation.
Yeah.
He's got one of the best Dikembes of all time.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
Steve is a good dude too. Yeah. I mess with Steve, man.
Yeah, Bomani Jones, his ascension. So I'm just looking at the list, man. You know, it was hard to pick a top three when you got this many high quality interviews, but. You know, it was a tough job, and we had to do it. But we're just so appreciative of everybody that is Sam Amick and Justin Garcia that has come through and dropped some knowledge, spent some time with us here on the Here District. And we thank you all, our listeners, for all your support, man. It's been a fantastic voyage, and we're just at the midway point in terms of this season and the Milwaukee Bucks and. I think the second half is going to be just as much fun, if not more. So, Here District, Marcus Johnson, Chris Johnson, happy holidays to you.
This has been a Bucks Plus audio production.